became entrepreneurs because, more than anything, we want freedom. We want to be in control of our own schedule, income, and life. But unfortunately, that isn't always the reality of being a business owner. I'm Gillian Perkins, and I'm on a mission to take back entrepreneurship for what it's supposed to be. In every episode, I'll share with you how to get the most out of every hour you work so that you can work less and earn more. Let's get to it. Hey, Cheryl, welcome to Work Less, Earn More. I saw your post in the Slack group the other day about how to launch your product or how to market your business when you don't have an audience, maybe when you don't have social media even. You are sharing with the members some ways that they can get their name out there if they don't want to use social media or they don't have social media. So I wanted to bring you on the show and chat with you about some of those strategies that you were sharing, because I think that a lot of us at this point are a bit over social media. We don't want it to take up so much time in our lives, or maybe it's just not working for some people. So thank you so much for taking the time to be here today.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here and happy to share some of the things that I've been using for quite a few years before social media even was a thing.
So my first question for you is, if someone told you that they didn't have an audience on social media, so they didn't know how to promote their business, what would you say to them?
I would say there's quite a number of ways that they could promote their business. I personally have been working in marketing for a long time, 30 years, and I had started out with non-social media concepts for marketing. So one of the things that I recommend is, first of all, thinking about strategy. There are some things that are more local. And if you have a business that's, say, a service business or something that is selling a product locally, maybe you have even a bricks and mortar business, there are some of these things that are going to work better for you if you have a local audience. There's also others that are going to reach a much wider audience, and even audiences that aren't yours. Maybe you can partner with people to reach their audiences and bring them into your fold. I have a list of about 15 things that people can do that are actually non-social media ways to promote. Some of them kind of are on the fringe of social media, but others totally not involved with social media. May require being online, but doesn't necessarily require social media and the interaction with a social media platform.
Yeah, that's awesome. So what I want to do with you today is go through this list, just one thing at a time, and talk about like what the strategy is. You said you have a list of 15 different ways people can market their businesses. Go through these things, talk about what it is, what the strategy is, and whether or not it is something that is useful for online business owners, and especially for course creators. Like, is this something that a course creator could use? And I think it's really going to be valuable to explore each of these different strategies, even if it's not something that is directly applicable to course creators or online business owners. Mm-hmm. And it really helps to just like expand the understanding of what is possible and to understand marketing strategies as a whole. I think it will really get people's minds working about what different options are available to them. Before we get into that list, I just wanted to also let you share a little bit of like where you're coming from with this. You mentioned you were running your business before social media, but I know you shared a little bit more context over in the Slack group about like where you got all these ideas, basically.
So I have very eclectic background. My initial education is in agriculture. So I was exposed to some business concepts in that. That's my formal training. And then I ended up getting a master's degree in marketing. And that was in the early 90s. And so many of the things that I have here are things that were actually being taught in business school. There was a very popular book available at the time called Guerrilla Marketing. J. Conrad Levinson is the author of that. And I would say if somebody wants to find that, it's a classic. There's some really good information in there. And some of the ideas I talk about today are borrowed from that book. And so I worked with a lot of small businesses through our local community college. I was a small business development counselor. And in that capacity, this is where I kind of cemented how to help people develop marketing strategy that put these types of tactics in place. I think it's important to clarify that these are all tactics. And when you put them together, then it becomes a strategy. and you have to select the things that are going to work best for your situation. Every small business has different ways that they want to market. And social media is a tactic. It's not a strategy. It's just a tool that needs to be integrated and folded into a larger marketing plan. And it has to fit you, your personality, and the way you feel comfortable marketing yourself. Some people will never want to get on stage to do a public presentation. And if that's not their deal, then they may not want to choose that option. That could be one of the options. So this all came together by way of experience with counseling a lot of other small businesses, most of which were bricks and mortar at that time, or home-based businesses, and helping them develop their marketing strategy.
So in short, this is intentionally outdated marketing advice because here's the thing. Businesses have been making money for thousands of years, and we've only had social media for the last 10 or 20. So there are ways to make money without social media, even in this digital age, even with an online business. There are ways to have a highly successful business without social media. So we're going to be getting into some of those alternative tactics you can use. And it seems silly to even call them alternative tactics because really these are the bread and butter, and social media is the new alternative tactic. And I think it's really important, Cheryl, what you pointed out about how these are just tactics and social media is just a tool that you can use tactics with. What really matters is that you have a big picture marketing strategy. You have a plan for what you are selling. You have a plan for how you're getting the visibility, how you're turning that visibility into leads, how you're turning those leads into customers. Social media might play a role. You might use some social media tactics to accomplish one of those aims in your bigger picture marketing strategy, but it is not a marketing strategy in itself, and neither are these. And I also just want to point out that aside from having a big picture marketing strategy, something else that I think is absolutely foundational and key is your marketing messages. A lot of these marketing strategies and tactics are really just ways to communicate your marketing messages to people. We're not going to be getting into creating marketing messages today or refining them or making powerful marketing messages. None of that. But that is the foundation. These are all just ways to communicate marketing messages. And you have to have a compelling marketing message before any of these tactics or channels or tools can really be effective. So with all those things in mind, a lot of caveats here, let's get into talking about these 15 different bread and butter tactics that every small business owner should be aware of when they're thinking about options for marketing their business. Okay, so the first thing you put on your list, Cheryl, is pretty it's the basic of the basic, right? It is word of mouth. Talk to me about word of mouth. What does that mean? And how could that be used to market a business?
So in my opinion, word of mouth is basically your reputation. I mean, it's absolutely critical that you protect your reputation, and people will talk about businesses that have integrity, that provide excellent customer service, that go above and beyond what is required of a business to make a difference. And they look at their customers as the most integral part of the business rather than looking at them as a byproduct of the business. It's really key to create a customer-centered business, meaning customers are not something that is in the way of you doing business. They are the reason why you do business. People remember that. They remember that they felt important. They remember that they were the center of your attention when you are teaching or when you are taking care of business with them, service products or whatever. And so they will remember that and they'll spread the word. I think that it is absolutely integral to make sure that staying customer-centered is always the primary goal. And obviously there's exceptions to when you have customers that you need to work with in special instances. But I'm saying your overall opinion of how you treat your customer is so important. And so word of mouth means that if someone is happy, they will tell other people. As a caveat to that, if someone is unhappy, studies show they will tell 11 people. If someone's happy, they tell a couple of people. But if they're unhappy, they will tell 11 people. And so we do not want 11 people hearing bad news about us, no matter how it works. So I think that's incentive to just make sure you provide the customer service and people will talk about you and they'll talk about you in a favorable way. Unfortunately, there's this lopsided statistic is literally they will only tell two or three other people, whereas if it's negative, it's totally the opposite. There was a study done, though, that if you have a customer that's unhappy and you come back and fix the problem, that individual will be very loyal to you and they will spread the word. They'll almost be more loyal than if nothing ever happened on the negative end. Mm-hmm. So there's some real interesting things that happen when you treat your customers right. They will spread the word. If you correct problems and take their suggestions, they'll even be more loyal to you. And on the flip side, they will spread the word otherwise. So we don't want that.
Yeah. Now, of course, there are those people who are determined to have a problem with you. They're determined to be negative and really mm-hmm. like you could have made no mistake in the first place and they'll have an issue with anything you do. And even if you fix it, they'll just be more annoyed. We've all had those customers.
Yes.
But the people who legitimately like you made a mistake and they were just like upset about the mistake, those are the people who you fix the mistake and they will be, like you said, just so loyal to you after that. And be so impressed with your customer service and just how you handled the issue. And I think, you know, you shared that statistic about like people who have a negative experience will tell 11 people. People who have a positive experience will only tell one or two people. And I don't have numbers for this other part of it, but also we see that a much higher percentage of people who have negative experiences will tell someone versus a very small percentage of people who have positive experiences will tell someone. Like think about when you buy something on Amazon, if you like it, how many of those products did you leave a review for? Versus if you didn't like it, how many of those products did you leave a review for, right? You're much more likely to feel like you need to tell people when you bought something that wasn't as good as it was promised to be to help other people, right? Help save them from buying this bad product. So I don't think that people are just like I don't think we need to be critical of people for being so negative. I think that honestly, they're actually trying to help people. But the point here, right, is that we need to make sure that we are going above and beyond for our customers because word of mouth can be powerful as a force for good in your business or a force for the destruction of your business, right? So my follow-up question for each of these different tactics is this applicable to online business owners and especially course creators? And I'll just answer this question right off for this one. I think it's an obvious yes. This is definitely applicable to online business owners. In fact, maybe even more applicable than to brick and mortar businesses because people are very prone to sharing their opinions on the internet. And if your customers are happy, they can easily share it on social media, even if you're not on social media, or they could tell people one-to-one. But if they're unhappy, then they're going to tell people that too.
Absolutely. That is exactly right. I was in the back end of the restaurant business. I had a delivery service that I provided for restaurants. And there were times when those folks had, when my order on my end didn't come in and I had to go, they had an event coming. It may have been on a Friday afternoon and they had a Saturday event and maybe my delivery didn't arrive when it was supposed to. I would get in a pickup and drive 5 hours to go pick up that order and take it to them because their event depended on it. Maybe they had a wedding, maybe they had a winemaker dinner, maybe they had something that was an absolute drop dead deadline that they had to, and they had that item on the menu for that dinner. And that's the kind of thing we have to do in order to keep our customers happy. I know it sounds crazy, but I mean, you have to make sure that if they're a loyal customer, which mine were, they were very loyal because I did stuff like that. People knew they could count on me to get the job done when their backs were against the wall. So being willing to go the extra mile is what does make your business stand out above the others.
Yeah, I can also share like anecdotally that there have been numerous times that I was like following someone on social media or listening to their podcast. I was really interested in what they were teaching. And so then I ended up buying their online course and I was disappointed with it. It wasn't not up to snuff. The quality wasn't what I expected. And it really had a negative effect on my opinion of them and their teaching and how much I continue to even follow them on social media. I chose to not buy products from them again in the future. And I certainly didn't recommend their program to other people. Whereas if I had gone into their program and it had been as good as I expected, then I definitely would have been sharing. So that's a lot of potential word of mouth that they missed out on. And I know that I'm not the only person who they had that experience with. You know, there were hundreds of other people who were also buying their product. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that plenty of them also had an audience, as I have an audience, and they could have gotten so much free marketing if their products had been better quality. Now, you know, like we all have to start somewhere. So you don't need to think that your product needs to be perfect from day one. It's okay to launch with a product that is not perfect for sure. But you can make up for it by being there for your customers, answering every question for them and, you know, having quick response times on emails at the beginning. And then eventually maybe have a product that is a do-it-yourself product with very little support, but the product itself is really high quality and answers all the questions within the product. So I think we need to make sure that we are really taking care of our customers mm-hmm. and that we are helping them get the result that they're paying for, however we do that.
Absolutely. Totally agree.
Okay, so let's move on to thing number two, content marketing. I think that most people who are listening to this episode right now who are listening to Work Less, Earn More probably know what content marketing is. Obviously, it's applicable to online businesses. I think though that a lot of times people end up like these days are feeling like it's synonymous with social media because they're certainly crossover. Content marketing and social media can be used together. Sometimes they are the same thing, but not always. What are your thoughts, Cheryl, or can you explain how content marketing can be separate from social media?
So depending on the platform that you choose for your content, obviously there could be social media elements in that. I know, Gillian, you're very much dialed in on YouTube. YouTube is considered a search engine, but it is also considered a social media. It's sort of a blend of the two. That would be one example of where you're using social media for or a search engine social media hybrid for your content marketing. I'm thinking maybe blogging, less social, not very social really at all. And that would be one platform that you could use, as well as podcasting, not so much social. Those kinds of platforms are going to get your content out, but not be Facebook type of interaction, social media interaction that is a lot of back and forth. Content marketing is somewhat more one-sided where you are producing the content for your audience. They may comment, they may reach back out to you, but it is not quite so focused on the back and forth as in some of the other platforms, Instagram and so on.
Yeah. So one benefit to using these types of content that are, I'll say, self-hosted, so like a podcast or a blog where you're not on a separate platform, a third-party platform, is that you get to be unplugged from those platforms, right? So if you don't want to be on Facebook, if you don't want to be on Instagram, then you can choose to not do that while still creating your content. I think there's also these kind of like pros and cons of this sort of content marketing that's on your own platform versus the third-party platform. On the one hand, the con is that you miss out on the social aspect. You're not going to get the same social proof where people see other people engaging with your content and that gets them excited because they perceive you to be popular. So you miss out on that. But on the positive side, and I think this is especially the case when your business is really small and your audience is really small, you don't get the negative side of social proof where maybe people don't see other people commenting on your content. Let me explain that a little further. There have been times when I started listening to someone's podcast or I started reading articles on their website and I was like, wow, this person really knows what they're talking about. And I was so impressed and I thought they were an expert. And I just thought they were an expert. I saw their expertise. Mm-hmm. If they'd been posting on social media and they had a small audience, they could have been saying the exact same things, but I wouldn't have given them the time of day because subconsciously I would have thought, oh, you know, like this person is a nobody. They don't know what they're talking about. Now, I'm not saying I would be right in that at all. Like I said, they could be saying the same things. They could have just as much expertise. But because other people were not giving them attention, my brain would have subconsciously said that this was not popular, that they weren't an expert, that other people didn't care what they had to say. So especially when your audience is tiny, like, yes, you need a strategy for visibility and social media can be really powerful for that. But in terms of establishing your authority, establishing your expertise and converting the visibility that you have into customers, sometimes being off of those platforms and not having to garner the same attention and engagement can actually be really powerful and can be more effective at getting that expertise or that authority.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, so in the interest of time, let's move on to the next thing, SEO, search engine optimization. So this is kind of the alternative to like, how do we get visibility if we're not using social media? And if we're not going one-to-one, the big bucket of alternative visibility strategy, we can either be playing the algorithms on social media, or we can be playing the algorithms on the search engines to get our content to rank. So this is what pairs with content marketing, typically getting your podcast or your blog or your videos to rank in search engines. Anything you want to say in particular about SEO, Cheryl?
No, other than it is the long game. And I think that content marketing and SEO really are hand in glove, and you have to be patient with it. I hear other content creators and those folks that are using SEO say, you know, you're looking at 6 months before you really see a lot of traction, maybe even as long as a year. If you're willing to play that long game and maintain your steady but moving forward pace, then you can see some real benefits from it. And regardless what you're using, if you're using social media or not, you really ought to be considering SEO as part of your marketing strategy. Because if you're deplatformed for whatever reason on social media, something happens where you can't use those tools any longer, you still have SEO as part of your backup. And I think that that's critical. You know, we'll talk a little bit more about having your email list also, which is another one. You know, if you're bumped off of social media for some reason or another, you have those two tools in your back pocket so that you don't have to worry quite so much about losing your audience entirely.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I think that the thing that is so, well, first I'll just say, like, I completely agree that SEO is a really important, at least backup plan to social media. And long term, it can be your bread and butter of your digital marketing. Can be so powerful. But I think that it's important to admit what is really hard about SEO. Aside from depending on your niche, it can be competitive. As you mentioned, it's a long game. It takes a lot of patience. So that's one thing that's hard about it. Something else that I found to be hard about SEO is that you often are doing it with very little feedback. Not just like no comments on your blog, but because it is such a long game, you do the work today and then you don't see the results from it for months, sometimes even like a year. And so it's very difficult to know, is this working? Am I doing the right thing? And so my best solution to that challenge is to be really, really clear on your end goal. And I don't mean the end goal of like getting 100,000 page views from Google, but your end goal in terms of exactly who are you trying to attract and what content do you know would be interesting to those people? Doing your due diligence, doing that research, and just being like doing a lot of hands-on work with creating content and like kind of like self-evaluation. A lot of the time we're marketing to someone who is where we used to be, someone who is not as far along on the same journey that we are on. So really going back and thinking like, what content was I so hungry for back then? But also talking to other people, also looking to see what is doing well on other websites or other platforms to get ideas. But just be really clear on exactly who you're trying to attract and what they are really interested in, and then make really substantial, good quality content on those topics and kind of put on your blinders or your blinkers, whatever you want to call them, and just forget about, is this working right now? And create some really good quality content. And that's what long-term is just the simplest of SEO strategies.
Right, right. Paying attention to keywords, and those can change. But knowing your audience helps you produce content that will rise in the rankings because people be looking for that. And knowing what, there's tools out there that help you predict the viability of keywords, and knowing what keywords, the low-hanging keyword fruit, so to speak, are the ones that oftentimes will help you get ranked on the first page of Google, which is really your goal, is to try to get ranked on the first page of Google.
So know what keywords you want to rank for, but then make content for people.
Yeah.
Because ultimately, especially at this point, like Google is designed to cater to people. Google's algorithm is completely designed to give people what they are looking for. And so you can almost ignore the algorithm. Now, learning something about SEO definitely can be helpful, but you can almost ignore it and just create quality content that is what the people you want to attract are looking for, and content that is good enough quality and is like what they are looking for. So I'm saying like both like on the topic they're looking for, it has the right headline, but also is the article that they are looking for when they're looking for content with that headline. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I have been doing deep dives into my own content creation journey and found a lot of articles that are not particularly helpful, and they're still ranking on the first page of Google. And so I say, okay, I think we can do better than this. And right there is an opportunity. It's an opportunity to create a better piece.
Yes, for sure.
Not necessarily longer, but just a higher quality piece of content that is more accurate, that has more helpful information, that has key takeaways and all the things. And Google loves that. They want to see something that is for an audience, not for Google. You don't create content that's going to get SEO recognition that doesn't attract humans.
Okay, so let's move on now to strategy number 4, which is email marketing. So when you put on your list ways, create a targeted email list and send regular newsletters or promotions to keep customers engaged and informed. So I'd class this as typically a mid-funnel strategy or an end-of-funnel strategy. So email marketing, it is not an advertising strategy. You are not going to use it to get visibility most of the time. This is for, you've already gotten the visibility, you've turned that visibility into leads, and now we need to warm those leads up and then close the sale. Email is super powerful for warming up the leads and can be used to close the sale. Anything you want to particularly call out about email marketing? Obviously, a strategy that can be used for online businesses and for course creators, like probably course creators' favorite strategy.
Absolutely. And even bricks and mortar businesses. I mean, I worked with bricks and mortar businesses before, and they got an email from me every week and asking, you know, what kind of things they might be interested in, showcasing what I had available, talking about what was going on in the background of my business. And that always was interesting to them. They do want to know about your business. And so my strategy with email marketing has been the 3 E's: entertainment, education, and e-commerce. You're not asking for the sale every time. You're entertaining, you're educating, and then asking for the sale.
Okay, so next on your list is guest blogging or podcasting. That's something that I've talked about a fair amount. It's one of the most powerful strategies when you don't have an audience, but you want to reach a lot of people and you want to do so quickly and organically. So that is in contrast to SEO. That's the long game, right? But shorter term, using guest blogging or guest podcasting will get you in front of a lot more people a lot more quickly. And then another strategy that can do that, which we'll talk about in a couple minutes here, is paid advertising. But obviously that costs money. So this is kind of the creme de la creme of fast and free.
Yes.
Any thoughts on guest blogging or guest podcasting, Cheryl?
This is a strategy that I'm pretty excited about for my own business, because I'm looking at reaching out to the niche podcasts in my space and pitching them my idea for a podcast. And I'm sure you get pitched all the time, Gillian, on these things. You can reach, you know, say if you've got the opportunity to do 30 guest podcasts or more podcasts a year, then you're reaching all those audiences. There may be some crossover, but you're reaching all those audiences with guest blogs or guest podcasts. You would have no access to those otherwise. And people that are in the other end of the business, blogging and the podcasters, are always looking for things that would be good for their audience and a different perspective. And so it's a win-win really for everybody when you do that kind of thing.
I think it's definitely a way to go like straight to the source, like straight to where the people are and meet them right there. It's kind of like if you were to go to a networking event, And it's like, well, I'm going there because the people are there, instead of just like walking down the road with a sign, you know, maybe like a sandwich sign or something. That's kind of what social media is like. You're like walking down the road and hoping that someone pays attention to what you have to offer. Okay. Instead, we're just going to like go to the event. Like that's why we're here, right? We're going to go to the event.
Right. That's a good analogy.
Okay. So next up is number 6, public relations. Tell us all about public relations, Cheryl. What is it? How would it work? Could it work for an online business owner?
Public relations is working with the media to get your word out with editorial content. So this is where you're looking at submitting press releases to print and non-print publications. You can do online publications just as well. And those publications will get your press release and maybe reach back out to you to do a full-fledged story. Maybe they'll want to write a newspaper article. And newspapers do still exist, even though people don't read them as much. Maybe they're online, but the paper versions are not so popular anymore. But they're always hungry for content because they are competing with other online platforms. They are competing with social media. And in order for them to exist, they have to have new content. And they want to see human interest stories or a story about a business that's got an interesting niche. Those kinds of things are still important. And if you're willing to engage and develop an email list specifically for your media contacts that have radio and newspaper and maybe even television, there's no reason why you can't be putting out a press release every time something interesting is happening in your business. And you won't always get picked up, but sometimes you do. Sometimes you get picked up and syndicated. This happened to me. Sometimes you are able to be spread across the entire nation in a syndicated article with newspapers. So these things will get out and help you get in front of an audience. Now, mind you, it's not always going to be a targeted audience, but you will still reach people that would not know about you. And maybe those people know someone that this would apply to, whatever your niche is, whatever your business is. Maybe they know someone that would.
So obviously not all of these strategies are right for every business. And this one in particular, as you mentioned, it's not targeted. It tends to be very untargeted. And so that means that it's going to be right for some businesses and not right for other businesses. If your business sells a super niche product at a really high price point, then this is probably not the best strategy for you to double down on. On the other hand, if you're selling something that is more generally appealing, more applicable to your average consumer, then this could be a really powerful strategy for you.
Depending on the publications, so there are magazines that are specific, trade publications and magazines that are specific, oftentimes to certain industries, and oftentimes they have columns where they feature new products, they feature new things that are interesting to their audience. If that audience is the same as your audience, sending a press release to those publications could be key to getting in front of the right people. There are targeted publications that could be important for your niche. So there's some ways that this could still work even if you are a niche business.
That's a good point, Cheryl. I like that. I also just want to point out how much crossover and similarity there is at this point between the guest blogging and guest podcasting we were talking about a few minutes ago and public relations. At this point, like we've got all of these online publications, a lot of them are websites and podcasts that you are trying to get onto their media, just like previously we were trying to get into print media. Now, I do think that there still is room here for making these two separate buckets or considering these to be two separate buckets, because most of the time with the guest blogging or the guest podcasting, we're talking about going on as a guest, being interviewed or writing an entire article for that website. Whereas with the PR, you're mostly talking here about submitting press releases or being featured as a featured story. And a lot of the time, this is more for like news type sites or news, obviously like newspapers. So it is two separate things. But like I said, there's just a lot of crossover. There's a lot of similarity.
And public relations can also mean things you do in the community that are creating an interface between you and the public. Maybe you sponsor events, things of that nature. That still falls under the umbrella of public relations. So there's a lot of facets to that. My suggestion, or the way I'm looking at it, is working with the media to gain media coverage. And so there's still other ways that it can be approached.
Okay, so we are running out of time, Cheryl. So let's do a lightning round. We're going to go through the remaining 8 strategies here. I'm going to call it out. You're going to tell us what it is. And maybe you'll say something in response, okay? Because I want to get these strategies shared with the listeners. And I don't know for sure if we're going to have a chance to fit another episode on this topic into the schedule anytime soon. So maybe we will do a follow-up episode where we go into these strategies more, but that probably won't be for a few months at least. So let's just get these out there. Okay, so number 7, networking.
So going to industry events in your particular industry can be huge. You can meet a lot of people. You can make connections, hand out business cards, which you should always have anyway. That's another tactic, is having a business card. So networking events are great for putting you in contact with peers that you could do cooperative recordings and shows and all kinds of programs with, or your customers.
And I'll just add that when you meet someone face-to-face, it's a lot easier to establish rapport with them and to start to build that relationship with them than when you try to meet people online. A lot of the time, it's a lot more likely to actually lead to a successful collaboration. So I think it's definitely worth your time. Okay, number 8, community involvement. How could that be used to market your business?
I briefly touched on this under public relations. You can sponsor events. You can volunteer. You can become a trusted member in your community. As an online business, this is maybe even having a, I hate to say it, Facebook group, but you maybe want to have a support group for your online community that is not behind a paywall, where you can offer information to help those people create community within your space. There's a lot of ways that you can approach that.
Now, number 9 is cross promotion.
So this is picking a partner that is complementary to you. Let's say in my particular case, where my niche is working with animals, and maybe I choose to work with an animal feed program, and the two of us can promote each other's products and services. Maybe they want to use my online course as a way to teach their customers how to better care for livestock, and I can talk about their product and how that fits into my program. So there's ways that you can work together with other businesses that do not compete but are complementary.
Great. So next is number 10, public speaking.
This isn't for everybody, but there's a lot of people that fear public speaking. But then I've also heard of a lot of folks that get up and do it, and then they realize, hey, this isn't so bad. Going to an event, particularly an industry event, and being a presenter, rather than just going to a networking event or an event that's in your industry, ask to be a presenter. They're oftentimes looking for presenters because they want to be able to attract their audience, and having presenters that are willing to take a certain topic and really dive into it is what those industry meetings and events are all about. So getting up on stage and talking about a topic that is pertinent to the audience and sharing your information on the stage is a great way to build credibility and also increase your following.
For sure. Yeah, I think it is a huge credibility builder. I often talk about how people perceive experts who they encounter differently depending on how they encounter them. So if you meet an expert on Facebook versus if you meet an expert on YouTube versus if you meet an expert via their podcast or a book, like, it gives you a vastly different impression of how expert that person is, how credible that person is, how much authority they have. If it's just someone who you stumbled upon on Instagram, then maybe you think, oh, this person's pretty cool, and oh, they have a big audience, and oh, they seem to kind of know what they're talking about. But on the other hand, if you get introduced to their book, if you read their book, well, you consider them to be like a serious expert on the topic. Or if you listen to their podcast, a lot of the time you think, oh, this person really knows what they're talking about and they're an authority in their industry. It just really depends. Well, if you see someone standing on a stage giving a presentation, they have literally been put on a pedestal, and you really, most people tend to consider that person to be an authority simply because they are on the stage. Clearly, like, the event has put their stamp of approval on it. Clearly, people are interested in what they are sharing, so they have that popularity. Clearly, they're an expert, or else they wouldn't have been asked to be a speaker. So it's this subconscious assumption that we all make, and you should take advantage of it for your business if you have any interest in public speaking at all.
And one more point is this particular tactic, public speaking, as well as anything you do in public relations, is essentially a third-party endorsement. You mentioned this when you were just talking, Gillian, about it. Mm-hmm. But what it does is people say, oh, the newspaper thinks that it's good enough, then it's probably good enough for me. Or these event organizers recognize this person's skills, their expertise, their credibility. Therefore, that means they must be credible. And that's a huge part of some of these tactics, is that you're getting an unwritten third-party endorsement just by the virtue of being there. So that's a big deal when you're trying to develop your audience and provide basically a social proof that you are credible and that you do have expertise.
Definitely. And I think that most business owners don't give enough weight or enough importance to how powerful those third-party endorsements can be and how easy they can be to get. Simply getting published in a publication gives you that third-party endorsement to anyone reading that publication. Okay, let's move on now to number 11, which is referral programs.
Right. So this is when you use your existing customers and sort of like word of mouth, only you are willing to reimburse or reward your existing customers for passing the word along about your products or services. And frankly, if you've got happy customers, this should be an easy offshoot for you to set up a referral program. Gives them an incentive to promote your product, gives you more customers that you wouldn't reach. And those are probably referrals that are within your audience. So this is a great way to leverage people that are happy and give them a reward for giving you new customers.
I was reading Sam Cart's kind of like state of the digital marketing industry report yesterday. It was actually very fascinating. It was all about like how digital creators are earning money at different price points and how different creators who at different business sizes are generating traffic. And I'm a numbers nerd, so it was really interesting to me. And honestly, like I think anyone who's interested in digital marketing or digital business would have found this interesting. There's just so many interesting numbers. One of the things that they highlighted on it as like a key takeaway was that businesses that earn a small amount of money, say, I'm going to round these numbers because I don't remember the exact numbers, but it was something on the order of businesses that are earning like $5,000 to $10,000 per month, only around 5% of them are using referral programs. But with businesses that are earning over $50,000 a month, so much larger businesses, over 50% of those businesses were using referral programs. And so that just goes to show how powerful those referral programs can be for greatly increasing your monthly income. Now, of course, that's not at all the only thing that is affecting their monthly income. There are numerous other things they are doing that are causing them to earn so much more. But it at least shows, if nothing else, that those larger businesses recognize the power of the referral programs, and so they choose to employ them.
And that circles right back to the very first thing we were talking about, is the word of mouth and customer service attached to that. Because those customers that are happy, they're going to be monetarily incentivized, as well as they're just, even if they weren't monetarily incentivized, they would still be a lot more willing to share the information about your product or service that they're happy with. Whereas this way, they're being rewarded. And I've used referral programs in a number of the businesses I've had, and it always pays. It always has paid for me to offer monetary incentive. Maybe it's a discount on a future order. Maybe that it's just a little cash reward. It was informal, and it still helped me build my business and reach people that I would have never reached before.
For sure. Okay, now tell us about trade shows, Cheryl.
Oh, I used to love trade shows because, again, when you go to these networking events or industry events, almost always there's a trade show attached to it. And sometimes a trade show is basically where a group of vendors come together in one industry and they meet in one place, maybe once a year. And there's educational opportunities as well as a lot of opportunity for networking and commerce. And having a booth at a trade show, or again, we talked about being a speaker at a trade show, can capture a lot of warm leads. And then also, again, third-party credibility on some levels, because there you are, you're in a trade show. People will see you and say, oh, this is a legitimate business. They wouldn't be here if they weren't a legitimate business. And that face-to-face, you can build your email list just by having a piece of paper and people signing up. It's just a lot of energy. A lot of times people are, they're open to doing business with you because that was the purpose of them showing up. So it's a great way. Can be expensive, has been in the past, less likely to be trade shows now. I think that it depends on your industry. There's annual meetings for some industries still, so there's still opportunities there.
This is definitely one that is a little bit outdated just with how the world changed with COVID,
yeah,
and also is a little bit less applicable to online business owners, but there's still opportunity there. And I think that the world is opening up more and more. And while some things are, you know, put online now forever, you know, and like people don't want to go back offline, on the other hand, there are a lot of people who want to go to in-person events. And so more and more of those are popping back up. And so like, check, like for your industry, look into it. Like, what are the opportunities? Maybe there isn't a trade show, but maybe there is. And maybe there will be in the future. As Cheryl said, like, it's a great way to network. I kind of like it better than networking events because it is more focused. Like, people are there for a reason aside from just networking. And so there's something, like, there's obvious things to talk about. You can talk about the other people's businesses. You can talk about your business. And that is a great segue into potential collaborations aside from potentially finding leads. Okay, let's move on to number 13, paid advertising. I don't think we probably need to explain this one, but what I'll just say about it is that a lot of the time people think, oh, I can't afford paid advertising. Okay, if right now you're feeling like you can't afford paid advertising, you're probably not quite ready for it. But when you are ready for it, it's not going to be an expense. Paid advertising is investment. You should be doing it in such a way that you are making your money back in the short term. So within a month or two, you're making your money back so that it is simply an investment and it is making you more money than it costs. Okay, I'm just going to leave it at that. We'll talk more about it in a different episode. Right now, let's move on to number 14, business cards and flyers. Pretty straightforward what those are. Do you think they're still applicable to online businesses, Cheryl?
Absolutely. When you meet somebody in person, particularly at these trade shows and networking events, if you ask them for a business card and they don't have one, you have to have them write it on the back of a scrap of paper. That does not make a good impression, you know? And I have bumped into people that really don't carry business cards much anymore. And I just still feel like it's a really important, do I remember that person? Not nearly as much when they don't hand me a business card. There's ways that you can, in some stores, depending on your niche, you can still put a business card on a cork board, a bulletin board in a store foyer. You know, you can still do those kinds of things that people will see you, and maybe it's just a tiny little segment, but it's free. What does it cost you? A business card. And, you know, flyers, if you're having a special event, that's more for a service business or bricks and mortar type of business. Online business, maybe not so much, although you can do share flyers. If you have a publication that sends out special emails where you can do an electronic flyer through an association, maybe another publication, a ride along, those are flyers too, even though they're electronic. So there's ways to reach people that way.
Well, Cheryl, you caught me. I'm definitely guilty. I do not have business cards at the moment. And I know I should get some because I've been in that awkward situation where I ran into someone who's either like a potential collaborator or a potential customer. And then they asked me like, what's your website or something like that? And I had to write it down on a scrap of paper. And it was so awkward. And I know it doesn't make a good impression. I've also had business cards in the past. And that's a much better feeling. I think the reason I don't have them right now is because of COVID. So I haven't been going to any in-person event for the last couple of years, but I'm excited to be doing that next year. And so this is a good reminder to me to make sure I get some before I go to any events, because I hadn't even thought of that, but that will make a big difference. And I'll also just point out that if you are going to get some business cards before you go to an in-person event or before you go to a networking event or something like that, the quality of your business card really does matter. I remember a few times in my life that I've been handed like a really premium business card and I like took it and I was like, wow, this is really nice. Like, where'd you get this? And I remembered that person because they gave me such an interesting or high quality business card. You also might consider doing something that's not a business card, but has your information on it. So for example, like a flyer that you can hand people instead of a business card, or something like a coaster or a bookmark that has your business information printed on it. That stands out to people because it's different. And it's also, if you can give them something that they will keep, even if it's something like throwaway, like a bookmark, but they'll keep it for a while, that can really make you stick in their mind a lot longer.
Yes. There used to be a number of years ago, a business that provided chocolate business cards. It was a little chocolate bar with your business information on the wrapper. And I thought that was a super unique way. Another way that folks have used business cards in a creative way is just making an oversized card. And particularly if you're visual, maybe a visual artist, or you're in a creative industry where imagery is really important, even if you aren't, you can use beautiful graphics and make your business card just a little bigger than usual. People don't use Rolodexes as much anymore, and they don't fit in Rolodexes, which is kind of the downside, but they do give an impression. It makes your business seem larger. It makes it seem legitimate. And when it's beautiful like that, people are less inclined to go home and say, oh, I don't know if I'm going to use this, and huck it in the trash. So that's another way to make an impression with your business card. And exactly following up with what you were saying, Gillian, is you see that and you go, ah, this person is really has this beautiful business card. It gives a feeling of legitimacy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that. So like, what if you had like postcards printed that just had a beautiful photo on one side and on the other side had your business info? People might stick it on their fridge. They might use it as a bookmark. Just as an example, just an idea. Okay, let's move on to the last thing. We already talked about this a little bit, but number 15 is affiliate marketing. Obviously a popular choice with digital marketing folks. Anything you want to say about affiliate marketing in particular, Cheryl?
I had to go look up the difference between referral and affiliate. I had to think about it a little bit because it seems like that's a fine line. Affiliate meaning people promoting your products that are not necessarily your customers. Mm-hmm. There may be somebody in your industry that is complimentary, but has not been an actual customer of yours. Maybe they have been, but that's another way to reach out to an audience that isn't yours. Reach more people. I know a lot of content creators and digital marketers use this tool as a way to reach audiences during launches that they wouldn't normally reach. I was able to participate in your most recent affiliate program. That was a little perk for me. So it is, and it's fun to receive that reward for promoting someone else's product, because when we're using word of mouth or some of these other tactics that we've discussed, your reward is just the feel good. But to have that little bit of money behind it, that's nice, you know, and a lot of folks can have a substantial income from this. So it works out very nice for both parties.
Okay, so that brings us to the end of our list. I want to say something that's really important before we wrap this up. And that is that we just handed you 15 different marketing tactics you could use to promote your business. And I do not want your takeaway to be that you should try to employ all of these different tactics. Like, definitely don't do that. Don't even try to do 5 of them. I want you to decide which one or maybe 2 is the best fit for your business right now and works the best with like your goals. You know, maybe you don't want to go to an in-person networking event. Maybe you want to do things that are entirely online, for example. So choose the 1 or 2 that would be the best fit for your business and your personal goals, and then research those and start working on putting those into place. That is going to get you much bigger and better results than trying to implement all of these or even just several of these. Honestly, you could use just 1 of these for at least 1 of the aspects of your marketing. So whether that is visibility or turning your visibility into leads or engaging your leads or closing the sales, you do need different marketing strategies for those different aspects of your overall marketing strategy, but you don't need to use all of these. Okay, so really focus in on just a couple. You will do so much better with that. The other thing that I wanted to say was just depending on what stage you are with your business, you might consider looking into Validate if you're at the beginning stages where you are just thinking about launching your product. We have specific marketing strategies in Validate that we guide the students to implement to have their first successful launch with their business. You can learn more about Validate at gillianperkins.com/validate. Or if you've already had your first successful launch and you're ready now to scale your online course, then you might want to look into 100K Mastermind. You can learn about 100K Mastermind at GillianPerkins.com/100K. That's GillianPerkins.com/100K. Because again, we have already put together the complete big picture marketing strategy for people to use to scale their online course. In the program, we guide you to build a sales funnel, which is the sales system, but we also teach you how to build evergreen lead generation systems so that you can consistently attract ready-to-buy leads every single month and send them into your funnel. So obviously, we just handed you a lot of tools, and I love giving and giving and giving. But if you're looking for that curated path, that pre-designed journey, then check out Validate or 100K Mastermind. Okay, so Cheryl, thank you so much for everything that you shared with us today. This was fantastic. I love all the ideas that you came up with and that you brought to the table today. And I think, you know, I already shared like this one takeaway of like take one strategy and implement it. But on the flip side, what I really want people to understand here is just that there are a lot of options. And social media is not your only option by any means. It is one option. There are so many other opportunities. You do not have to be on social media to have a successful business. And if you are in social media, you don't have to have a big following. You can use it in tangent with other strategies. You can use it just to complement other strategies. It can be one small piece of your marketing strategy. It is not the end all be all.
Exactly. And as one last thing I want to mention is there are some social media platforms that are less social, such as Pinterest and some of these other platforms that aren't quite as social. They're more search engine. And those platforms certainly are going to help you garner an audience without having some of the busyness of some of the platforms that tend to be very social, such as Instagram and Facebook.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Cheryl. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your wisdom and your experience that you shared with us today and all the ideas you brought to the table.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Are you ready to finally take the leap in your business to making six figures every year? I would love to work with you to turn your inconsistent income into consistent 10K plus months. And we've created an entire program to guide you to do exactly that. It's called 100K Mastermind, and it's a six-month mentorship that will guide you to set up your strategic automated sales funnel system and fuel it with ready-to-buy leads. Because I know that you don't just need a funnel, you need a strategically designed funnel that's based in sales psychology. And you need a system that's going to send leads into it. Because a funnel without any leads flowing into it isn't going to make you any money. If you're interested in working together to get your six-figure system set up, then head to GillianPerkins.com/100K. That's GillianPerkins.com/100K. On that page, you're going to find all the details about the program, what we cover in it, exactly what you'll learn and what you'll accomplish, as well as the dates for our next cohort and the link to apply. Again, just visit GillianPerkins.com/100K. I can promise you this, your business and life will never be the same.